Bees are a big deal right now. Just yesterday, the Medford City Council approved on first reading, there has to be a second, an ordinance allowing people to keep beehives within residential areas in the city. Other cities have already made similar moves to allow more people into the beekeeping business. And a beginning beekeeping class offered by the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association this weekend filled up about a week in advance. So let's talk to the people who've been in the bee business for a while about the attraction and the execution. Sarah Red Laird is in the studio once again. She goes by Bee Girl around the Rogue Valley. Good to have you back, Sarah.
Thank you. Good morning.
And on the phone, also from the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association, Dewey Karen. Welcome, Dewey.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Dewey, let's start with you. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into the bee business.
I've been teaching bees mostly on the East Coast. I'm retired and moved to the West Coast to be near the grandkids. I got in bees because I liked biology as a student in school. I wanted to work on something that, you know, you would work on their numbers, their population, but wouldn't want to try to work on so that you could kill them more effectively, like many people that work with insects do. So bees were just an ideal for me.
And how long doing it?
Something like 50 years.
Wow. Okay. And Sarah Red Laird, I'm going to guess you've been doing it a little less time than that. But tell us about the initial attraction to you for beekeeping.
Yeah. For me, it was when I was about 3 years old. My family had a couple of hives of bees, and I was completely fascinated with them from such a tiny age and carried that with me all the way to college when I went to the University of Montana in Missoula, where they had beehives and a bee lab and were doing some really fascinating projects for pesticide research, colony collapse disorder research, bomb sniffing bees for the U.S. Department of Defense. And I got sucked right into the lab. And once those bees got their little hands on me, their little feet on me, they just never let me go. So right now I should be working as a policy analyst in D.C. on water issues or maybe in Helena in Montana, but instead I'm back home in Southern Oregon and working with bees.
So it's a full-time thing for you?
It is, yeah. The Bee Girl organization is a nonprofit, and I work very full-time.
More than full-time, yeah. From the sounds of it. Let's talk about the attraction for other people, because I had asked you when we came in how big that class is this weekend that filled up, and it's 100 people, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And how unusual was it for it to fill up a week in advance?
It's always full, but it never fills up so fast and sells out a week in advance, which is really exciting. I also teach beekeeping classes. I taught one in February, and it also was the biggest capacity that I've ever had, which is really inspiring. It's great that so many people are interested in bees.
Dewey, Karen, what explanation do you bring to the table about why people seem to be so interested in bees at this moment in history?
There's been a lot of information about bees, and so part of it is that. Part of it is that they are livestock that you can manage and make a difference. We need them for the beauty and diversity of our plants around us, and of course for their products. We get more of these people today. People and other courses throughout the state have also had the same experience. They filled up early, when people wanted to start bees. It's something that you can do on a small piece of land, a small farm, or even on city property, and help make a difference.
Speaking of city property, that was the ordinance last night before the Medford City Council passed narrowly first reading and has to pass a second reading to officially become an ordinance. But you were there at the meeting,
mm-hmm.
Is that right, Sarah?
Yeah, that was such an amazing experience for me because everyone that was in the audience that was there in the crowd to testify to the Medford City Council, I've worked with on some capacity, either in my classes or I've gone and visited their bees and done a consultation, but it's usually me doing the teaching and me standing up there. And it was really such an amazing experience to hear all of the people come up and testify as to what bees and beekeeping meant in their lives and really hear them having the spotlight on them and hearing their story. And it was amazing to hear the different reasons why people are interested in bees. One woman is a veteran who's recently back from the Middle East who would like to keep bees to help with her PTSD therapy. Another woman wants to keep bees because she just loves every beekeeper she's ever met and she wants to be part of the beekeeping community. Another beekeeper was testifying as having such a positive experience here in Ashland as a beekeeper and the connection that it's actually forwarded with his neighbors. He sells honey that he produces from his own backyard in Ashland, and he just sells it right from his house, and he has a little sign in his yard. And he's developed this really cool relationship with his neighbors that he's never met before, people from up the street and down the street and walking by. And so it was really fascinating to hear all these different ways that bees can affect people or do affect people that I hadn't even thought of.
Dewey, Karen, that's got to be a change, certainly over the course of your lifetime. It sounds like we're close to the same age, and I can recall when I was a kid growing up in the New York suburbs that the only reaction people ever had to bees was, look out, a bee, don't move. And it seems like we've changed a lot.
Indeed, yeah. My experience, I grew up in a rural area, and it was, the older farmers that had a few trees and a few other animals and a few different plants. It was sort of the diversity at the time. And we then went through this specialization. The beekeepers got bigger, much bigger in terms of number of colonies and fewer in their own home properties. So it has. It's gone through a cycle. In the 70s, it was fairly popular as well. When in the 80s. So some of these things go in cycles, but I must say I haven't seen a cycle quite as strong as the current one and the current level of interest.
We're talking about bees with a couple of beekeepers. Dewey Karen on the phone, Sarah Red Laird here in the studio. You can see her picture on our Facebook page and call them with your questions or comments about what goes on in the beekeeping biz. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. How does one get started? It sounds like both of you have been around bees for so long. It may be a while since you've had to go to this step, but how does somebody get going? One of the things I saw when I went and looked on the internet was don't buy bees on the internet. So can you explain where people get bees and why the internet might be a problem?
Yeah, well, I don't know if the internet's necessarily a problem, but it starts with education. So going to a bee school, at least the first year that you're going to have bees, and maybe even a year or two before you even get your bees. And also connect with a mentor, mentorship and hands-on. That's kind of some beekeepers that have been around for a while are driven up the wall by the internet because anybody can post anything on the internet and there's so much misinformation out there. So it's so important to actually work with the beekeeper, find a mentor, go to bee school, take some classes, get some great books that are recommended by your mentors or recommended in class. And the Oregon State Beekeepers Association, along with Oregon State University, has an awesome master beekeeping program that pairs you with a mentor, and it's just a really, really amazing program. So definitely people-to-people education is where it's at.
And Dewey, has the process changed very much in the time since you started doing bees many years ago? Is it a very different thing, or is it just sort of a timeless process?
It really goes back. We've been keeping bees since antiquity. Our modern techniques are not very different. It is a little bit easier. But there is a learning curve. We encourage people to get that early assistance, the school, the mentor, also to kind of plan to stay with it. Be realistic in terms of what you might want to accomplish with the bees and plan to stick with it. You're not going to learn all that you need to know about bees in the first month or the first year. And I guess that's why I've stayed with it, is that it's still very much a learning process. I've been teaching bees for all these years, but it's still also a learning process for me, and that's what makes, for me as well, very enjoyable.
Give us an example. What are some of the things that might have been brought to your attention in the last 5 or 10 years that made you go, huh, never thought about that?
Well, recently there's been some development in terms of how we put bees in a beehive and put them in our yard or on our farm property. And there's been development of new ways, new types of hives, homes for bees. And so a number of people, instead of having just one type, now will have two or three types and are seeing the differences and enjoying the differences in which they bring. Certainly that's one. All their communication and science is advancing how we keep bees. We really haven't domesticated a bee in terms of like we have it over animals, but we learn to apply its biology. So the more we get into the biology, the more it offers us as an experience, a reward back from what we're doing with them.
Which is an interesting concept. We talked about bees as livestock. Dewey did a few minutes ago, but it's not like cows and horses, Sarah Red Laird. You don't have quite the same relationship, do you?
It's the relationship that we have with bees is a very different one because they're like half domesticated animal. They do need you. They do need your care. There's, as we talked about the last time, there's varroa mites, there's starvation issues, there's diseases and funguses and viruses and bacteria out there that you have to be aware of. But at the same time, they are wild. They leave the hive and they spread out on a approximately a 25 square mile radius. And so they're a little wild, but then they're also kind of need your care, or they do need your care. And so I think that might be part of the attraction too, is that they're not like a dog or a cat where they don't need you all the time. But then they're also not this kind of wild thing that's just out there. You do get to have a relationship with them. And every single hive has a different personality. The queen brings the personality into the hive. And so there are some hives that are just so sweet and make so much honey. There are other hives that are really mite resistant or really disease resistant, but they might be a little more spicy. Every single hive has a different personality. And that's one of the great things about being a backyard beekeeper. I know many commercial beekeepers who run tens of thousands of hives, but they'll have three or four hives in their backyard because they really like having that personal relationship with their bees, and they have their bees that they go home in their own home sanctuary and get to experience beekeeping, experience bees on a personal level still.
So Dewey, Karen, what is the life cycle like? I mean, what if you decide you want to get into this and you get enough training to get a hive in your backyard, field, whatever, what are some of the things you expect as you go through the life cycle of a hive?
The individual hive or a family, it really is a large family with the one queen as the female producing all of the offspring, has its own cycle. The bees cycle through various jobs within their home, and then they are foragers that go out of the home to bring resources back. So all the action is right there at the hive, right in the hive. They construct the wax cells in which they store their reserves and rear their young. And then there's a very pronounced seasonal cycle that's very dependent upon the plants that are available, not just the plants that farmers might have, such as the pears and the clovers, but also all the variety of plants that we might have in our backyard that might be along the stream, in the forest, et cetera. And their cycle then follows that. There's a season during the winter when they're living on their resources. Now here in the spring, they're expanding with the flowers, expanding rapidly. At this time, they may want to do the division that Sarah mentioned, which is dividing the colony unit. We call it swarming. Beekeepers, individuals can capture the swarms, put them in a new box, a new hive, and start a brand new colony. Or they might manage the colony so it doesn't do the division and build another colony themselves. They're going to build to a population. This is, coinciding with the plants that are most beneficial to them. And then in the fall, they'll prepare for the overwintering period. So there are several overlapping cycles that are going on, and that's one of the skills that you develop in terms of the care and why they do need the care. If for whatever reasons there are not enough flowers that year due to a drought or poor weather conditions, we can supplement those. We can help them grow in the spring so they are stronger and better able to take care of the flowers. So there's a cycle of our looking at them in sync with their internal cycles within the family and within their whole seasonal colony cycle.
So, Sarah Redlaird, how much work does it take? I mean, how much time are you going to spend with any given hive over the course of a week, a month, a year?
Well, your first couple of years are definitely the most time intensive. It takes a while to get comfortable with the hive, moving through the hive. That's when you're going to do your reading, your networking, showing up to bee school, showing up to a lot of SOBA meetings. And then it kind of backs off after the first two or three years, and you just get more comfortable and things are quicker in the hive. I definitely would give yourself at least 2 hours per week per hive just for building your equipment, for checking in on the bees, for preparing sugar syrup if you need to, for spending time on the internet buying things that your bees are going to need, for reading bee books, going to meetings.
Sarah Red Laird and Dewey Karen are both members of the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association, SOBA. They have a training coming up this week that sold out or filled up a week ago. But you can join us now to talk about beekeeping and the renewed interest in it, the surge in interest in it. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dewey and Sarah.
Hi. I like bees a lot. I have some in the backyard. And I had two questions, though. One, I have a feral, I guess, hive, because they're a tame species, kind of. So I have a feral hive in a tree that always seems to do, it never dies, and the beekeeper box ones do occasionally. But my real question was, is the proliferation or even the existence of the European honeybee in any way impacting the native pollinators, the bumblebees, and I don't even know if mason bees are native, but so is our use of this species impacting native species the same way, you know, cattle impact antelope and stuff like that? I'll listen off the air.
All right, thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. Dewey, any thoughts about non-native bees and their proliferation around the region?
You know, the reason this bee does so well is there was not a native social bee that at all, anything like the honeybee. There's one in the very far southwestern United States. So it was really a niche in an area which they have done very well. The only social ones we have are things such as bumblebees. They partition the environment so that, for example, bumblebees will visit different types of flowers than will the honeybee. So there's not the competition for the floral resource. The feral hive that the listener mentioned is bees living in a tree or in communities, you know, in a church steeple on the side of a building. Those are niches that are nesting sites that other things are not using. So either in their nesting for their site selection or in their food selections, are they really have they displaced or are displacing other bees that are native here? So no, in fact, for the production of the plants, for the reproduction of plants, we find that competition of different types of bees and butterflies and flies, et cetera, visiting actually enhances the pollination. In other words, the seed set, so the plants actually do better if they have a diversity of floral visitors versus only a single type of specialists that comes to pollinate. Some plants are so specialized they do need a specialist, but many are not.
Okay, and Sarah, you wanted to add something here?
Yeah, also just on the habitat-wise, 90% of native bees live in the ground, whereas honeybees don't. So they don't really compete for home sites at all. And then also, my thought is that all of the conservation concerns are the same for both the honeybees and the native bees. It's the changing climate, increased use of pesticides, habitat loss, and right around World War II, 1940-ish, we had estimates of 100,000 colonies, or excuse me, 100 million colonies of bees with all the honeybees out there as well. So there was many, many managed colonies and so many feral colonies as well. And at the same time, native populations of bees were absolutely thriving. And so I don't see the loss of native bee pollinations really being attributed to honeybees. I think that it's more the aforementioned things working against both species. And therefore, if we can work to recover the honeybees, the native bees will recover. If we work to recover the native bees, the honeybees will recover.
So if it was 100 million colonies back then, what are the estimates now? Are they much less?
I think it's about 2.5 million, Dewey, is that right?
The managed honeybee colonies and the feral colonies that the listener mentioned initially were down considerably, you know, the bee trees and church steeples, but they are now rebounding. Their population is now coming back to a healthier level too.
So coming back around again to what to get started, and again, I'll make sure we make it clear to people, get some mentoring first before you attempt to do this, but is it as simple as if you set up a bee box, bees come, you do have to get some bees for the box too, right?
There's a few different ways you can get bees. So you can buy a nucleus colony of bees, which is like a starter kit with bee It's like a small beehive with frames and foundation and eggs and honey and a queen that's laying. You can get a package of bees, and this is like a bug zoo full of bees that don't have any comb or aren't on foundation and not really in a – it's just a temporary box. It's not a beehive. You can catch a swarm, so you can go out and pull some bees off of a tree in a pillowcase.
Yeah, I was going to say be careful there.
Be really careful there. Do it with a mentor. Or you can. You can set out a box, put a little bit of lemongrass oil, which bees really like in it, some beeswax, maybe a little bit of honey, and you might attract a swarm to come into the box that way.
Oh, okay. So it can actually happen without the actual purchase of bees. Cindy and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Red-Laird and Dewey Karen. We're talking bees.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are.
I live in Talent, and my husband and I have a 80-tree orchard, and we got bees for the orchard. And then and we have four hives. Well, we had three, and then they swarm, and so we keep catching them, which is really fun. The other thing that I ended up doing was, because of my concern about pesticides and herbicides in the area, I started a bee garden, a bee pollinator garden, which is about 5,000 square feet, and I'm also growing milkweed for butterflies, and it's a labor of love, but that's my story about bees, and I just wanted to make a book recommendation to anyone that has any interest in bees into the, oh my gosh, what a fascinating
okay, and what's the book?
This is The Buzz About Bees. Mm-hmm. By Jurgen, that's first name, J-U-R-G-E-N, Tautz, T-A-U-T-Z. Okay. Fascinating book out of Europe.
The Buzz About Bees. Thank you so much for that. Good to talk to you, Cindy, Sarah Red-Laird, and Dewey Karen from the Southern Oregon Beekeepers Association. Thanks for joining us for a refresher course on bees, and best of luck with the training.
Thank you, Jeffrey. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Yeah.
And that'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Thank you for listening.